Hello. Is this thing on? Hi, it's Edward Marlowe for the For Those Who Inquired podcast. And yeah, Neil Bradley here in my kitchen. What a lovely Sunday afternoon. Neil, how's it going, man?
It's very good. I'm glad actually to not be in the hospital. So that's good because I think Matt McMahon, the last three Saturdays, has tried to put me in the hospital.
With a heart attack?
With a heart attack. And he's been unsuccessful. Obviously, he's trying. And three straight weeks of that. But somehow the cardiac kids survived, and I lived to tell about it one more time.
Anyway. I don't understand. Why is Matt McMahon being so inconsiderate?
I don't know. We get along really well. I don't understand why he is being like that. But I can think of no other reason. I know Matt likes to win by lots, but he had the Shane Nichols quote he's used twice this week. Don't you hate it when other teams try to win too?
Yeah.
And they're screwing up all of our plans the last 3 weeks.
You're right.
They didn't completely, but if they would just not try to win, would lay down, it would have been a lot easier on me. And we could have coasted to three victories.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. They still won. And it was it's been a magical season to this point. Still more to go, but the regular season curtains down on that, so we can at least talk about that, is being the greatest ever in terms of OVC success because no one's ever gone 18-0, and just did it.
They haven't. I was going to try and like bury the lead here and
okay.
go into the Murray State men's basketball season, and but I'm not going to. You're already there. We have two teams that have finished conference play undefeated, and it is, surprisingly enough, after absolute roadkill on Saturday, and I mean that quite liberally,
yes.
Your seven of your top 10 teams went down on the road.
Including the top six.
Yeah, including the top six, and then TCU at nine. South Dakota State and Murray State are the two teams that have finished 18-0. And you just brought up these three cardiac comebacks. You had at Tennessee State, you were down there.
I'd forgotten that one.
Not necessarily a cardiac.
I was just doing the Saturday ones.
Right. You're down 13 in that game.
Yeah.
Then you willed your way to Moorhead, which we've already talked a little bit about. Then you had a blowout win of Austin Peay. So you think, oh, well, you're going to ride that momentum into Martin. No. You shot 34% from two against Martin. You had about an 8-point lead with 6.5, 7 minutes to go that just completely disappeared. And then you had to find the game-winning basket. They missed a layup, which is familiar. If you watch the Moorhead State game, UT Martin misses a tough layup to kind of make that game on ice. And then Murray State wins the buzzer on a terrific inbound play. KJ Simon, who was terrific in that game, we'll get to his name later, missed a contested three. Yeah. Trey Hannibal contested it well, but it looked on the mark on the television screen. And I was like, oh, wow, what a great shot. And then it just clanked off. And I was like, okay, you survive. You have a – this deserves a podcast on its own. You – I'm going to use the word again. I've been using it a lot this week. You immolate Belmont. 76-43, and you think, oh my God, well, you're going to ride that momentum again to SEMO in a barn burner. SEMO, earlier this year, you'd played them to start the season. What do you know? Bookends to the season. You'd played SEMO opening night of the OVC. It's a 106-81 win? Did I get that right?
Yeah,
was
right.
It 106-81?
Yeah.
I need a new life. 106-81 in what felt like an NBA game, pace-wise.
Sure.
Like, let's just go. Just do it. Let's just run. Hell, screw it all. Why are we playing defense? And we knew that was going to be a good game because that's a SEMO team that had beaten Missouri State.
Yes.
Who might win the Valley this year. Might. Loyola Chicago, the favorite there. Drake, you and I, you know, it's a solid league. One, the Racers will be in soon. And then let's just talk about it right now. You get to SEMO. SEMO, number one, shoots 50% from the field, 40% from three. They out-rebound the Racers 32-30. And they had nine guys score at least 4 points. They found balance. They attacked the Racers from all five different angles and nearly had the upset.
Yeah.
And you're here with a pulse.
And they were playing with a lot on the line. Had they won, they assured themselves of a day off in the OVC tournament. They assured themselves they wouldn't play Wednesday. Turns out they lost, and they got the help they needed with Belmont beating Tennessee State. So they still get that day off, but they wanted, I'm sure, to take care of themselves. Plus, I mean, it's the OVC. How many times do you host a top 20 team in your building with a chance to beat them on senior day? So this is going to be a senior day that those guys would never forget.
Never.
And they don't have many seniors anyway. Manny Patterson and Nigel Russell, and that's it.
Who were both terrific.
Yeah, they got everybody back.
Yeah.
But those two. So they Brad Korn's got something pretty good going there. And with the vacation of Murray State, Belmont, and Austin Peay, they could be that team with a little bit of help. I was pretty impressed with what I saw out of them yesterday. But it was one of those comebacks for the ages. But it's amazing, Ed, that's there at Southeast Missouri. It's been just one racer story after another. We have so many great memories in our time in the Ohio Valley Conference over there, and almost all of them are positives. I was on the bus with Marcus Brown. He fouled out with 5 minutes to go back in 1994 with the Racers down 18 with 4:34 to go in the game is when the Racers started their comeback. They came back and won there with Marcus fouled out on the bench.
They were down 18?
Down 18 with 4:31 to go. 4:34 to go, yeah. And they came back.
You spotted 3 seconds there, and that means a lot.
It's 4:34 to go. And, no, 4:31. 4:31 is what it was. Because I had it written down on my score.
Who cares? Three seconds doesn't matter when you're down 18 points.
4:31 to go. Marcus Jones, one-year guy. He got hot. Transfer from Alabama. Vincent Rainey wasn't really supposed to play much, but he had to be forced into action that day because of foul issues. So he played. I remember he threw a crazy pass that two SEMO guys almost knocked each other down to intercept. Didn't get it because they ran into each other, and we get it and get a layup on it. So had to have a few things go our way. Marcus Jones went down with what looked like perhaps a critical ankle injury late in the game when the Racers were out of timeouts. But suddenly, miraculously, he was able to recover and came back and was able to help close it out. So I've seen some comebacks there, but I got to see one this past Saturday, down 12 with 6:38 to go. And this was a day with not really that much going on. There was Marcus Brown sitting on the bench as a coach this time, though. But he got to watch another amazing comeback, and the Racers were able to do that. They let defense take over, 20-6 run down the stretch. And Juice Hill, let's be quite honest, he hadn't had one of his better games.
It was a tough game.
He had four turnovers, hadn't shot it really well. But he made two unbelievable three-pointers, and then KJ was KJ, Tevin was Tevin, but the outlier was Trey Hannibal, who had a career-high 20 points. He was phenomenal in the first half, made big plays in the second half, and they eke out a win and have a perfect OVC season and an 18-game winning streak.
You and I talked a little bit about this pre-show, but you had this situation where, and I've got the play-by-play pulled up because it was that contentious of a ball game. DQ Nicholas makes a jumper at 6:38. It's 62-50. And then the Racers, Tevin Brown's layup is blocked by Manny Patterson, who was terrific.
Yeah, that was a foul. I don't think he fouled. It was a guy behind him knocked Tevin down.
Yep.
But no whistle. That was right in front of us.
And then Philip Russell has a three-pointer that just caroms off the rim. It was a great
look. Good. I thought it was a 15-point game.
It was a great look. Should have been a 15-point game. It's not. One Justice Hill gets the rebound, and then that's the point where things started to turn. Racers cut it to 62-52, and then Southeast Missouri State in the final 6 minutes hits 2 3-pointers. Now, the second three-pointer was pretty contentious. I thought one of the bigger plays in that entire situation, DJ Burns gets the flagrant, gets the free throw. They score on Justice Hill's three-pointer to cut it to a one-point game. That was an offensive rebound and assist from DJ Burns to Hill in the corner, right in front of me and the bench.
It was an assist, yet if you check the box score, he's not credited with one. So I don't know what happened there. But, yeah, it was an assist, clearly.
Yeah, yeah. So Juice makes that three, and then the crazy thing about it is, you know, SEMO makes their one free throw. Nigel Russell probably – he split the pair. You know, they go back up one. We don't know what happens. If he makes the other one, it could have been anything. But with a tie game, Justice Hill making the three at the top of the key on a slight screen, Hannibal off of a flare, and then he just takes it, drives right against Philip Russell, I believe.
That wasn't the plan. No. They wanted to get it to somebody else, but they were out of time.
Yeah.
So he had to shoot it.
He had to take it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then we say these things. Eric Reed is the one that made the three-pointer to make it 62-50 from the top of the key with a hand in his face from about 30 feet out.
And he'd done virtually nothing all day.
He then made the three to cut it to 70-68. Hill gets fouled, naturally. Oh, he's going to make his free throws. Yeah, it's the one and one. He misses the front end, and Simo can't score to win the game. Heart-stopping. I mean, the same thing happened in Morehead. They weathered it, persevered it. The same thing happened in UT Martin, weathered it, persevered it. And listen, we talk about ripe for upsets. You look at the numbers of this game, it just didn't necessarily go the racer way mathematically. You didn't shoot well. It was about 43%. Simo did a pretty good job defending. Didn't make your threes, 5 for 20. Made the two that mattered late in the game. But you didn't shoot well, and free throw shooting was decent, strong, 68%. You take that. Your misses weren't bad. It was Trey Hannibal with two misses and everybody else with a couple. You got out-rebounded, but here's the big thing, too. And Matt McMahon, seventh-year Murray State men's basketball coach, mentioned it, and it's a good point. Simo had 17 turnovers, none more deadly than the kicked ball turnover, where it was technically a kicked ball, but they touched it on the way out. Patterson was on the baseline, and it's an on-the-floor call. He touched it while it was headed out of bounds, and that's a turnover. Yeah. And that was Racer defense just playing so well down the stretch.
But it wasn't the turnovers per se. It was turning those into points, the points off turnovers, because just the turnovers doesn't necessarily get you points. And the Racers, that was the major difference in the game in any stat category, was that category.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that Simo did to Murray State, Neil, and you and I have talked a lot about this and how important it is for the Racers to share the basketball, is typically a pretty high assist rate when the Racers score. A lot of times it's a 40%, 50% rate. You know, you get 13 assists on 26 baskets, 14 assists on 27 baskets, so on and so forth. That's kind of the metric. They really want to move the ball. Simo held Murray State to 6 assists on 26 baskets.
Yeah, a lot of the baskets that were being scored during a large stretch was by KJ Williams. They'd get him the ball. He was having to really work for the shots, put it on the floor, move across the lane one side or another, and the assist evaporates at that point.
Yep.
With the one-on-one play. But more often than not, he was spot on. And if there was any doubt about it, the last week basically cemented him as your most valuable player in the OVC, because time and time again, when they had to absolutely have him, KJ stepped up and made the play.
Yeah, his last month has been unbelievable. He's averaging, what, 25-7?
Yeah, he was going into yesterday, over a five-game stretch, he was averaging 28 a game. So that's in the crunch time of the season when they were going to hopefully clinch a championship.
You're ranked. You've been ranked for the last five games. Yeah. You're just trying to hold on. And I say hold on, you blew out Belmont. Again, deserves its own podcast. We're not there. That's been two games ago. But dismantling Belmont the way you did, I do think it deserves at least a minute or two mention here.
Oh, sure.
I absolutely. 76-43, in which Belmont shot 30% from the floor. They were out-rebounded 40-22 and lost the fast break battle convincingly, 19-0 in fast break. And I don't want to make too much of it because Belmont's a terrific team, but that was a thorough dismemberment of a basketball team.
Well, Casey Alexander in the second half, when he took the second timeout, his team had the look of a team that had given up. They wanted to get on the bus. Mm-hmm. Now, he took the timeout, got into them, and what did they do? They made five of their next seven shots. And what happened after that? They'd made up no ground on the Racers.
Zero.
So they were playing harder and better, but I think at that point they knew it doesn't really matter what we do because we have no control over this anymore.
Yeah.
We'll just play as hard as we can, make some shots, and hopefully it isn't going to be a 30-point loss. And guess what it was? And I'll tell you what. I mean, if they meet again, I don't see a matchup where Belmont beats them. Heck, they might, but I haven't seen it in their faces. They look like, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
In the second half, I mean, they just didn't have any answer at all.
And I think a lot of that just stems from the fact, I'm not even going to talk about it from a Belmont perspective, it is a defensive perspective. Murray State's defense has been the we've looked for answers. He's out Tevin's scoring. You've had your fourth 20-point scorer now in Trey Hannibal. You've had four different guys score 20-plus points this year. We can talk about balance. That's kind of close to the calling card. Calling card's defense. That's it. That's whatever the case. Yes, they can get hot and shoot. We know the Racers are a good three-point shooting team on average. We know they're a good two-point shooting team on average. They're a good to great rebounding team on average. What they've been so good at all year, and it bears repeating again, is defense. The defense hasn't let them down. And I know at some point there's only two ways that this season can go. You're either a national champion, which seems highly unlikely. You just never know.
Yeah.
You're either a national champion or your season's over. That's where the loss is. Now, I caveat that by closing out this discussion of Racer basketball by saying you're in the NCAA tournament, period.
I believe so.
I'm not even slightly convinced you're in. It's just a matter for seed line at this point. Mm-hmm. You're a top 25 KenPom. You're the only one of only two teams to go 18-0 in your conference or undefeated in your conference. Your numbers are there. Your net's there. Your haslametrics are there. Like, it's all there. Every number you could possibly think of that could just, their strength of schedule just wasn't that great. No. You want to win the OVC tournament. I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But there must be, I hope that there is an ease and a peace of mind saying, we've done our work. Now, you don't want to be like Anthony Davis's Kentucky that goes into the SEC championship and loses to John Jenkins of Vanderbilt. You don't want to do that. You want to win your conference championship tournament title. You want to do that. No one ever walks in and says, this doesn't matter to us. It certainly does matter. But there must be comfort in the locker room in Mac McMahon's eyes and his team's heart saying, we just went 28-2. We're in the tournament.
There's no comfort. Let me tell you how that's going to be approached. Guess where they were picked? Third. How many first place votes did they get? Zero.
That's true.
Nobody. That's nobody true. Thought they were going to do this. Nobody. Nobody thought they would go 18-0. Nobody thought they'd be nationally ranked. And they are. And they still have that. And this is a team that really loves the chip on the shoulder. And it's going to be put on there. And they're going to have it. They still have two games of disrespect to take care of as far as they're concerned. Here's what you thought of us, and here's what we're going to do about it. Matt never looks ahead. All he's going to be planning on, we only have one game on the schedule. We play Friday night.
Right. Don't even know who that is yet. Might be SEMO again.
So if you get on a Zoom this week and ask him about the NCAA tournament seed, I know what the answer would be. You can save yourself your breath, but like, we're not in the tournament. The only game we have is Friday night.
Right.
So I don't know who we play. We'll play one of these three teams Friday night.
That's fair.
And if we win, then we'll play one Saturday night against somebody else. But they'll arrive with I still think they got a chip on their shoulder. They feel good about it, good enough to get Krispy Kreme donuts after the win last night.
Sure.
You got to celebrate with a donut.
You absolutely.
That's what the players wanted. You win. You go 18-0. You deserve a donut or six.
Yeah, because donuts look like little zeros.
So they were juiced. They were, and no pun intended there, I promise, but they were rocking and rolling. They get the donuts. I'm sure sugar crashed 20 minutes later. You couldn't hear anything in the back at all. They had already crashed out. So they were pretty tired, I guess, from that, plus all the donuts that they had popped in there.
Unreal. Hey, it's unbelievable. We could continue to talk about a lot of this. It's hard to think about where – you can't look that far ahead. You are right. Friday brings an unknown opponent. You think it might be SEMO based on seed line. It's the lowest remaining seed, I believe, is what plays out on
Yeah, they'll get Friday Tennessee night. State, SIUE winner will then advance to take on SEMO, and then they'll get the survivor from among those three teams. And the good news is they put himself in the top seed spot, and I think this is really important. You get the 7 o'clock game as opposed to that 9:30 game. That's mm-hmm. a late tip-off. By the time whoever plays that game on a Friday night gets their players fed and in bed, to me that extra time does make a little bit of difference.
Yeah, and you're back up the next morning.
Right, right.
And you already made the double tree. You'd already earned the one seed.
There you go.
Cemented 18-0.
And I know we'll talk about it later, but they're there with the women's team this year. I love it because the top three women's seeds get to go to the double tree. So it's a double tree extravaganza for Murray State basketball.
Let's pivot to Murray State women's basketball. That's a great way to do that. Murray State women, it's hard to really analyze a specific game just in the last couple of weeks. Tough loss against Belmont, but I mean 85-79, and you defended everybody as well as you could. You double somebody, someone else is open. We'll get to that in a minute, because Belmont certainly deserving of the one seed and regular season champions. Terrific team. Tennessee Tech the two, Murray State women the three. I get at that being Murray State women's basketball was picked to finish third this year. A couple of tough overtime losses probably took them out of some bigger conversation. But 21 wins. You won at SEMO on Saturday, convincingly, by the way. And that's no disrespect to SEMO. I know that they've had some really critical issues this year.
Yeah.
Some defection, some players that didn't want to finish out the season, some injuries early on, just kind of derailed what's, you know, Rika Patterson and that team has been trying to build for the last two or three years. I mean, this we're talking about an OVC champion 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, good program, just got to get back on the right track. I digress that by saying that Rochelle was playing like her reserves in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. That's how convincing of a win that was. Caitlin Young, 29 points. And we'll get to a discussion about her in just a few moments about how she should very much be like KJ Williams, I would think, a lock for player of the year. But a discussion can be had there. So with women's basketball, it's really – well, first of all, 21 wins is tied for the most in school history. You finished 13-5 in OVC play. I mean, within a hair of 14-3, maybe even, or 14-4, maybe even, you know, 15-3. You're just within a hair of that. I mean, Rochelle said after Saturday's game, I mean, you take the whole season in stride. It's a successful season.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to get to the OVC tournament and defend to that spot and try to make it to a semifinal game and pass that. You want to be right in the championship. You get the winner of UT Martin and SIU Edwardsville, both of which can be daunting opponents, but you had success against them this season.
Mm-hmm.
So I just – what are your thoughts? What have you seen in the last 2 weeks, and what do you – I mean – what is there to take away from how good this women's team has been? They're in the mid-major top 25 poll now. They've been, this past week, right before the Belmont game, they were announced as the 25th best mid-major program in the country from mid-major hoops. I thought that really speaks a lot of levels. People are paying attention to what this women's team's doing.
Yeah, the first game against Belmont, I thought they were just handled fairly easily, in my opinion. Not as much in the second game. Their issue, because I've watched the women's games, almost all of them, not all, but almost all of them this season, and they've had the turnover issue with them. And during that Belmont game, as I'm watching every play, I'm taking a look at points off turnovers, and that was the difference on the scoreboard almost the entire game. It'd be 10 points, 11 points, 12. It was almost the whole game. That was the difference in the game. They rebounded pretty well against them. They shot it pretty well against them. They weren't awful defensively. They couldn't stop Belmont's best player. But other than that,
Wells is good.
Destiny Wells was awesome that night. But other than that, I mean, there's a lot of positives to take away from that. And I know, Rochelle, they're not going to go into the week, well, what are we going to do to beat Belmont? Well, again, they don't play Belmont.
Right.
They play Martin or SIUE, and then they'll play somebody else. And if they win that game, and if they get to the championship, they may not play Belmont. They may not be there. Who knows? They need to just worry about what they have. This is a team loaded with experience, and this is what I like about them. They play very hard, very smart team. They don't foul and get themselves in trouble. The one area that they need to have a successful weekend in order to advance is that turnover. They mm-hmm. can't have a blow up of turnovers. Keep it 12 and under, and I think they'll be fine. But they're going to have to manage that this week. Every other part of their game is excellent. And the good news is we're talking about them having a shot at winning the tournament, a legitimate shot at winning the tournament, instead of, hey, sure glad they're there. You know, a few years back, that's where you were. Let's hope they make the tournament.
Glad we made it.
That's done.
Yeah.
We're not hoping they make the tournament anymore. We know they're making the tournament. Now you're hoping for a good seed. They just missed a 2 seed. It was close, but
just missed it.
But they're the 3 seed. They've had so many great highlights this season, and still more to come. And they, you know, 21 wins, the most, as you said, in a regular season, so they'll still chase the school record for victories, but who knows, they may can accomplish that this week. We'll see.
It's possible. And here's the thing, you take a look at just some of their numbers and what they've been able to do on the year, and then they're averaging in conference play, which again is what's important, most important to me. You've had, well, first of all, more than anything, you've had Caitlin Young and Hannah McKay step up and lead the team in scoring in conference play. Maybe not every night, Caitlin close, but Caitlin and Hannah McKay are, Caitlin's at 20 points per game, 7.8 rebounds. Hannah's at 13 points per game, 6 rebounds. And you have, of course, Macy Turley and Alexis Burpo right behind them. And then your fifth best scorer is Lex Mays, who's been their top 3-point shooter in conference play. Macy just a shade clip higher. She has 29 threes in conference play, and Lex has 27, both of them shooting 43%. So, I mean, there's balance there. There really is. There's balance. You've got Lex Mays, who's kind of a fifth scoring option. You have Bria Sanders-Woods, who has worked on her assist-to-turnover ratio. She's up to 1-to-1 now, and she's also double digits in steals. You can kind of tell her speed is maybe starting to come back a little bit.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that knee brace feels great. There's no way.
No.
You know,
so I'm sure she hates it, but
yeah, she's not close.
It's a condition of her playing.
Yeah, exactly. But you have you take a look at women's basketball since February 5th, they've gone 6-1. I mean, they might be the hottest team in the league, not named Belmont. And I say these things with much respect to Tennessee Tech and how terrific they've been. But that's a racer. This is a racer team that whoever, if they face them, they split, you know. And then you take a look at SIUE, had the close win at SIUE, and then had the big win at home. And then the same with UT Martin, had the big time win early in the season at home, and then played really well against them on the road. So you feel comfortable there to make the semi.
Yeah.
And from there, well, then you're just kind of playing with house money, and it's going to be a tough opponent either way.
Oh, yeah. But it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be easy to win conference tournaments, and it isn't easy on the men's side, the women's side, or virtually in any tournament. It just isn't easy to do.
One of the biggest things that I think is a really interesting stat for them is they defend really well, typically. I mean, there's been some games where they've obviously had some lapses, but average-wise, teams are only shooting 40% from the field.
It's good.
Against them in conference play, 33%. From the arc. And by the way, Murray State's free throw differential here is 16-7 in conference games in makes.
Wow.
So they're not even fouling teams horrifically. You're not seeing fouls pile up and having to dig deep in the bench. Granted, there's been some games they've gotten to get into the bench, and I think that's a blessing. You know, they've been able to turn to people like Bria Sanders-Woods, Jada Black. We've seen quite a bit. Kaysen Connor played in all 18 games. All 18 conference games this year. And I think this is worth noting. She's averaging 12 minutes a game as a spell guard, either as a point guard or even sometimes as the two. She has only taken 30 shots. I know Rochelle's been like begging for her to shoot more, particularly open threes when they're there. Kaysen's a prolific three-point shooter. At least she was in high school. They want her to be taking those open shots. She's not been great on her free throws. Not a ton of opportunities there. But she has more assists than turnovers. And she's played a steady role in saving the legs of these players. Just kind of an unsung role. But, I mean, seriously, she's one of only, I'm counting up right now, Caitlin Young, Hannah McKay, Alexis Burpo, Lex Mays, Bria Sanders-Woods, and Kaysen Connor are the only players that have played all 18 conference games this year. Macy had to sit out, unfortunately, for those two, mm-hmm. but she'd be the other one. So Kaysen's kind of like an interesting role player. For the Racers this year. And Jada Black had to sit the one, so she's probably would be the other one. That's, you can tell that's where the rotation is. Those are this is the trust company right here. This is who we've got. The other player that I want to mention, and we're going to get into this discussion in just a moment, Alexis Burpo. It just bears mentioning again just how terrific she's been this season. She is one assist away from leading the Racers during conference play. Macy has 61 and Alexis has 60. That's wild.
And she's not the point guard.
She's not the point guard.
Right. She does so much to impact winning.
She's Tevin.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's
pretty much.
She's not a terrific 3-point shooter. She's taken five for, she's like that. That's like 2 seconds on the shot clock. We got to get a shot up. But as far as that utility player that's got to do a little bit of everything. We need some rebounds. We need some assists. We need some scoring, slash to the basket. That left hand to right hand, left side basket that she always takes and always makes.
Yeah.
Like, no one can defend that. She drives left, switches from her left hand to her right hand, scores on the layup.
Yeah.
I'm not defending that. No one's defending that. Like, what? Are you, what? That's not real.
And now, unlike her high school career, you foul her, she's going to make the free throws.
She's an 80% free throw shooter.
Because in high school, and I've said this many times, I hate to keep, but what I'm saying and what I'm trying to do is give a lot of credit to Alexis Burpo. Of the three girls that Rochelle brought in, I was afraid that Alexis, she was very thin, didn't shoot free throws well, and I wasn't sure that her game would translate as much to the college game. Like, but I don't recruit.
Yeah.
So I'm not supposed to know, but I just didn't think it would.
I want to give a quick shout out, actually, to I almost said ESPN's Blake Sandlin, but that maybe later on in his career. WPSD Local 6's Blake Sandlin at the Belmont, I believe it was the Belmont game, and even then after, he followed up at the last home game on Saturday against it was the Belmont game.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to think the women played Belmont. That is exactly what happened. You know, he asked, you know, what's it like to have Macy, Lex, Alexis, these three? And we've all asked this question a lot, but it's like, what's it like to see them, you know, respond and play as well as they have over these last couple of years? And Rochelle, I'll just go to Twitter. Yeah. Rochelle's answer's there. And it's like, hey.
Shame on you.
Shame on you. Right. That's what she said. She said, shame on you.
Yeah.
She said, we saw the tweets. We saw the messages. We saw the people that didn't think that they deserved to be, you know, on a Division I OVC team. And, you know, they are like, you know, I'm the coach they are because of them. And I was just like, oh, okay.
On the Burpo thing, it wasn't that I've thought that she deserved it. I just wasn't sure. I thought, you know, she's going to have to put on some weight. She's going to be, she's a little skinny. I'm afraid she's going to get pushed around.
Sure.
As I said, but look what she's done.
Yeah.
She's helped transform herself into, look at this, someone who flirts with triple doubles almost nightly. Mm-hmm. She rebounds. She assists. She defends. Just everything. She is such a complete college basketball player.
Right.
And of the three, shockingly so to me. I mean, I thought maybe she would be able to play a role, but not this. I mean, she's one of the most valuable players I think Rochelle's probably ever had, because she knows if I need this from her, I can get it from her.
Right.
I need you to rebound tonight. I need you to play some guard tonight. Whatever I need you to do, I know that you're going to do it. And she is that she's the emotionless one out there. No matter what she does, you don't ever see her crack a smile.
Not really.
I don't. I've never really seen her do much of that in terms of when she does something. She'll just do it and come down the floor and just keep playing. That's just what she does. It's kind of like, this is my job. I'll just do it.
Yeah.
But it's just been such a pleasure to watch all of them. And if we don't get to see any of them ever again after this week and playing basketball, it's certainly been a pleasure. It's been fantastic. And they've really represented their high school very well, their community well, but also Murray State University. I couldn't be more proud of them. And that's why I'm really pulling hard for them to really have a special week.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And I want to really super quick backtrack and even mention that as well. Just from an analytics standpoint, I think it's fair. From a fair analysis standpoint, just as an outside observer who's seen a lot of basketball, I thought Alexis would succeed, but I thought it was a role player type situation. No one knows. You don't know when you get to college. You brought about fair questions. It's the same questions that anybody asked about, like, is John Morant really going to be big enough to just get into the trees of the NBA? And we were wrong there too. But
yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
it's fine. We're allowed to ask these questions. It's just asking the question. Hey, you know, what is Alexis Burpo's role going to be when she was coming out of high school? You know, was she going to be a guard? Was she going to be a tweener? Was she going to be a forward? Come to find out, she was going to do a little bit of all of it. And then for one half of a year, ended up having to play point guard when Macy got hurt. It's just, she certainly has developed her game into being not just a serviceable player, but a really, really good player and a borderline convincing all-OVC first team. I'd say the only reason I say borderline is how many racers can you put on the all-OVC first team?
I get it.
The only thing I get. Can you put all four on there? I don't know. Like, I mean, because you had Hannah McKay play really well this year, Alexis Burpo, and this is what's going to transition to our next conversation. Can you put, and we'll just start with the women, can you put Caitlin's on there? Do you put Hannah McKay and Alexis Burpo as hybrid players? And do you put Macy Turley on there, considering she's been all OVC first team the last 2 years? What do you do? 3 years? What do you do?
Well, I have to admit, I think they're deserving, but I don't follow the other women's teams as close. So, yes, I say so, but I don't know who I would be leaving off if I did that. And
well, here's
I wouldn't really have a fair team to do on the women's side.
Here's the thing about it. Look, we can talk about the women. Let's just go ahead and get into it. Caitlin Young and Destiny Wells, and we'll get into a player of the year and coach of the year discussion in just a few minutes. Caitlin Young and Destiny Wells, you're on. You're probably the two best players in the conference. I don't even think probably.
Yeah.
I think you are. You are the two best players in the conference. You turn on the TV at night, those are the two stat lines you're looking for if you're wanting to look at OVC stat lines. You've got, from that point forward, just from a scoring perspective, Neil, and hear me out, you have Lariah Washington for EIU. Okay, they're in the tournament. All right. She's averaging 15.5 points per game. You've got Yamaya Johnson from Austin Peay. Okay, sure. 14.9, Austin Peay. Pretty solid team this year. Probably on that conversation. Graduate transfer Carly Pace. Yeah, she's probably going to make the team. 14.7. You have Gabby. I always have trouble with this, and I'm going to say it. Gabby. I'm going to try this. I'm going to do it. Gabby. I think it's Nikita Naite. Yeah. Gabby?
Gabby Normal.
Yeah.
No. Oh, no, it's a... sorry.
Gabby Nikita Naite. Okay. Yeah. Nikita Naite.
Sounds good to me.
Nikita Naite. Well, it's an interesting last name. For SIUE, she's averaging 13.8. Macy Turley, 13.8. Jada Claude from Moorhead. I don't know if Moorhead gets a player on the All-OVC Top 10 because of first team, because Moorhead had such a tough season. But she led them in scoring at 13.6 points per game. Anna Jones for TTU. Tennessee Tech. I mean, somebody from Tech's got to get on. They were one of the best teams in the league.
You'd have to just go to other categories besides scoring.
You do.
Leading rebounder.
Yeah, and then you have Tatiana Davis, Tennessee State. She's averaging about 13 points per game. After that, it's a veritable mix of players. You've got, your top rebounders. Well, Anna Jones, top rebounder. Alexis Burpo at 7'7", and Caitlin Young. Yeah, Anna Jones is third, Burpo's second, Caitlin Young first. Hannah McKay, fifth. Again, you and I have talked about that a lot. Three of the top five rebounders in the conference belong to Murray State.
And do you remember the day when Rochelle played? Would someone please
get aboard?
Get me a rebound.
Yeah.
Get me one.
Two of your top field goal shooters. You have some very limited scoring from APSU and Deshara Booker and Lyric Cole, but 3 and 4, Caitlin Young, Alexis Burpo, Anna Jones is fifth. So you're seeing what I'm getting at here. You brought up these other stats. Assists, Kira Arthover from EIU, Destiny Wells is second, Jada Gwynn for Tennessee Tech. So maybe Gwynn's in there, Macy Turley's fourth, Burpo's sixth. So now Burpo's second in rebounding, sixth in assists, fourth in field goal percentage, and 20th in scoring. Sounds like an all-OVC first-teamer to me.
Yeah.
Hannah McKay sounds like an all-OVC first-teamer to me. Macy Turley sounds like an all-OVC first-teamer to me. And then player of the year, it's got to be Caitlin Young, right? She won player of the week seven times.
I think so, but remember a lot of times it'll go to the –
top team.
Best player from the best team.
The best team.
And by best team, I mean team that finishes first.
First place team.
Best player from the first place team often gets that award. And last year, just to show you I don't follow the women's game as closely, last year, I picked it up. Players of the Year announced today and saw Freshman of the Year went to Destiny? Well, of Belmont. I was really upset. Then I went and looked at the stats and went, okay. Yeah, she in as good as Caitlin was. I mean, there's a great case for Destiny Wells. She had a fantastic season. So once I looked at it, I was all right with it.
Look at what they did in the postseason.
I was fine. So, but this season, I think she has the edge. I really do think Caitlin has the edge. She's just been so terrific and so impactful for Murray State.
Number one in rebounding, we've already talked about that. Number three in field goal percentage, and then I want to just bring up a couple of other really interesting stats. She's also the top free throw shooter in the league. Not Macy Turley. Macy, of course, certainly. Well, actually, Macy hasn't taken enough. Macy hasn't taken enough free throws to qualify. Caitlin Young is first. That's crazy to think. Like, she's shooting 86.6%. She's made 155 of 179. She's missed 24 free throws in 29 games.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we continue to top 3-point per shoot, 3-point shooter, Macy Turley at 44%. So again, I think Macy's first team. She's also first in threes made in conference play. Then you go to two block shots. Okay. Where is she on that? Caitlin Young is 10th in the league in block shots. She actually tied for 9th. And then you go to what else that's so good from Caitlin? She's also one of the league's top offensive rebounders at 2.1 offensive rebounds per game. And then you go to defensive rebounding, and that's where she leads the conference. And so you just look at her value at all three levels of scoring. You add on the fact that in OVC play, I had this pulled up, in OVC play, she shot 35% from three. I mean, she made 12 three-pointers. She didn't take a ton of them, but she made about one every other game just to keep defenses honest. She shot 89.6% from the free throw line in play. Oh, and she had 13 blocks. She averaged almost a block per game in OVC play. I know Destiny Wells has been terrific. It's worth looking at her numbers, and I know that Belmont was the top team. So there's certainly that conversation again. I have to think Caitlin Young gets a real discussion here.
I think so. I do think Belmont has an argument for their player, though.
Absolutely. Coach of the Year.
Those are always very difficult. And see, again, on the women's side, I didn't really do any homework on that.
Well,
I would pick Rochelle, but
here's the thing.
I don't even know the names of most of the coaches.
Do you go Kim Rosamond for Tennessee Tech, considering the injuries they had early in the season?
And that's something you'd have to think about, because
and look at what they did.
Yeah.
Or do you go Burt Brooks again, because Belmont's Belmont and they won the league again?
They did do that. Yeah, you never go wrong. You don't have to apologize if you pick the guy who wins it, to me. I really don't ever think you have to do any apologies. Like, well, how'd you give him good? Well, he won the league, so that's pretty good.
Right.
That's essentially what you get paid to try to do every year.
I mean, it's just going to come down to how the league feels. Right. League constituents and SIDs.
Good candidate. I think Rochelle's definitely in the conversation for sure for this.
Certainly a conversation, no doubt.
I don't know how that voting will go, because, again, I just don't follow it enough to make a great argument.
I just follow it enough in the sense that you have an intriguing argument for all three individuals.
And I think it'll come from those three.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which means one of the others will get it that was supposed to. Who knows? Tennessee State might. They actually have surpassed probably what they were predicted to do. So.
Because that's a fair argument. Tennessee State women's basketball, I mean, you take a look at what they were able to do. I'm bringing up just some stats right now, and that's, you know, they brought in a veteran in Ty Evans, regrouped their entire roster, got a couple of graduate transfers, and said, let's play ball in Nashville, and did. Mm-hmm. Now, they had some tough losses, but you're not wrong. 2 years ago, they weren't even necessarily invested in their program, so much so that they had to have somebody in the interim step up who's now an assistant at Murray State.
Yeah.
In Sarah Jones. So it's just, you're just like, well, what are you doing? They brought out a pretty decent Tennessee State women's basketball program this year. So this is an intriguing argument. I know we don't have a ton of facts to roll through it, but I think that there's an interesting conversation to be had.
Right.
Well, let's just go ahead and shift and work our way down for the men.
Okay. There is no argument over there.
Are you sure?
There's no, yeah, if you argue it, you're wrong.
Yeah.
So I just want to tell you that.
I'm simply being.
We're looking for coach of the year, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
There isn't an argument.
I'm simply being contrarian, because we know that in years past.
Oh, yes, we do know.
We've had some head scratchers.
Yes.
I'm not trying to knock anybody.
Could have had three OVC coach of the years now, and he has zero. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have any.
Not a one.
But anyhow.
The slander.
We'll see. We'll see. If he, I mean, this is his last chance to get an OVC coach of the year. This is it. And if this doesn't do it, he just needs to say, well, obviously, that doesn't matter what I'll do because I could never get one. Because if this won't do it, 18-0, you know, 28-2 now, I guess, through 30 games.
Yeah.
That I'm not really sure what you'd have to do it.
I mean, you can talk about teams that have overstepped expectations. You can talk about Belmont doing their thing. You can talk about Moorhead and Spradlin, you know, building off of last year and still being a pretty tough power. A couple of recent upsets lately that kind of really intriguing. I think offensively they've really struggled the last couple of games. SIUE with a big win and SEMO. There, SEMO buried 15 three-pointers at Moorhead to help them finish 13-5 in league play. Still a dangerous team, still terrific defensively, but I think some things have kind of faltered in the last couple of weeks for them. But
And I've already been asked the question, and I told Matt this on the bus last night. I'll get asked it, I'm sure, because we don't know where this team will end up landing in history quite yet. But I've been asked, is this the greatest Murray State team in history, or is this one of the greatest? Where does it rank? It's like, you know, those are very difficult to do because you always have the recency bias and stuff like that.
You're right.
But name the Murray State team that beat the second place team by 33-22 or anywhere close to that, that absolutely dominated the second place team. They're the only one that ever did that. So you can make your arguments for the other, but, I mean, they were that much better on those particular nights than the second-best team, which was really good.
Yeah.
And they annihilated
them. Oh, yeah.
And here.
That Thursday night 2 weeks ago, that Thursday night was – or not two, a week ago. It's all a blur now, but it's 2 games ago. Was the first game in the NCAA where two teams combined for 50 wins this year.
Yeah.
And you know, as you get later on down the season, more of those games are going to come up as we get tighter and tighter. But it was the first one of the year. Murray State, Belmont, 26 wins, 24 wins, combined 50 wins. A lot of greatness on that floor.
Yeah.
And Murray was superior.
Did a pregame interview with their play-by-play guy, and he was asking me, you know what I thought. And I told him, I said, Belmont, I think the Racers defended well there, but I think Belmont will make some of the shots they didn't make in that game. I expect a lot closer game in this one.
Okay.
Well, I was wrong.
Yeah. Shepard's three cut it to 16-13, and I thought, okay, we're going to have a game.
And that was the game.
That was the end of it.
That was the end of the game right there.
It was the end of it. Yeah, it was done. They went on a 19-4 run into halftime and then extended that run into the second half.
Yeah. When the coach calls the second time out, they were basically asking for mommy at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Please no more.
Yeah.
We've had enough.
Yeah. If Casey had said, let's just hop on the bus and head on out, I don't know that they would have argued much about it.
Yeah, like, I tell you what, we'll leave. You guys keep making baskets. Do what you want. Right. We're out of here.
But he got them back on track, and they played, I think, pretty hard from that point on.
Yeah.
It didn't make much progress in the lead, but they played pretty hard.
Let's go to – we just made a laundry list of women's basketball players that we think have a chance to make the All-OVC first team, and I think there's an argument for women. Neil, you've come prepared. I've got a few notes as well, but you come prepared.
I have.
I want to, because we'll compare it. We get all the OVC information at the middle of this upcoming week. Who do you think is going to make first team all OVC this year?
All right. It's not that I initially agree with this, but it's a 10-player team. So
right.
Last time I checked, there are no 10-player teams in any basketball game, but that's what they name. So this is just the list of players.
Okay.
Three from the Racers.
Okay.
KJ.
Okay.
Devin Brown.
Okay.
Jusil.
Okay.
Go to Belmont.
Okay.
I only have two players from Belmont. I have Nick Mazinski and Ben Shepard.
Okay.
Jani Broom from Moorhead. Eric Teed, as it turns out, I can't spell, but let's go ahead and give that to Eric Reed of Southeast Missouri. I like him a little bit better. So Eric Reed.
Okay.
I like KJ Simon from UT Martin.
Okay.
And Kasim.
He is the league's second leading scorer.
Kasim Nicholson from Tennessee State. He's been very impressive, good in scoring, also a really terrific rebounder, good defender. And this is the 10th one that I struggle with, and there's three or four guys you could put here. Elijah Hutchins Everett.
Freshman.
I have him
Austin Peay's freshman. He is looking at some numbers right now. He finished the conference 12th in scoring, and he finished 5th in rebounding. Okay.
Yeah, has good numbers there. I know the noticeable name off is like, well, you obviously don't have Grayson Murphy on there. Like, I don't. And I think he's a really good player. I think he had a bit of a down year. Heck, he might have a great week and lead them to an OVC tournament championship. But I think these other players, in my opinion, had a little bit better season. But Murphy, he didn't shoot it well. He did defend well, picked up steals, picked up assists. Good job there. But that's my 10.
Grayson Murphy finished 9th in rebounding in conference play, or not in just in mm-hmm. all play, at 6.1 rebounds per game. He finished actually 10th in field goal percentage at 51.5%.
Hits the layups. Yeah, that's his bread and butter. Well, those back doors, he's awesome.
That's what I was going to say. And you bring up a great point. He's also second in assists behind Moorhead's Talon Cooper, just behind, as a matter of fact, 185 to 184. One assist from leading the conference in assists again. So 5.9. So certainly a bread and butter guy, leads the conference in steals, 2.4 per game. Certainly had two or three big ones early on that I thought would be like, well, this is going to be a tight game. And then it wasn't. And his assist turnover ratio is third behind the tied Justice Hill and Keyshawn Davidson from Tennessee Tech.
Yeah.
So Justice Hill, certainly probably in that first conversation, that all OVC first team conversation. What I was getting at is
his numbers are solid. Grayson's in those areas.
14th in minutes. He's not even top 30 in scoring.
Yeah.
Did not finish top 30 in scoring. Trey Hannibal averaged more points per game than he did. And I know points per game isn't the total tail sign to all tails.
Well, especially in his stats, his or other things. The thing is, though, I had him 11th. So it's not like I had him 20th. I struggle between Elijah Hutchins. I like the way he impacted Austin Peay. I think he helped get them to where they are. But I mean, you know, Grayson, I'm sure, did with Belmont as well. So argument can be made, but at least there's a little bit of controversy there.
Do you think, well, it'll be interesting. Do you think a guy like Junior Clay, I know Tennessee Tech had a rough season.
He shot it well later in the season, but he was awful for his standard.
Yeah.
Shooting the ball early
on. And he came off the bench a lot.
He started shooting it a lot better. Yeah, he was off the bench. I think that's just a product of how they wanted to use him, though.
I'll tell you what really hurts is we don't see Rayshon Taylor anywhere, and that's because
he would have been there.
He would have been.
If it wasn't for the injury, he's on the list.
I think he's top 10. I mean, he just got hurt and didn't get to play like the final part of the OVC season, and he's just such a terrific player.
He is.
One name that you did not mention that I do think will probably be, I think Simo gets two, actually, because they finished as the 4 seed. Phillip Russell where is he on your list?
Freshman of the year.
Okay. Okay. So if he's freshman of the year, he doesn't make all OVC first team.
I had him just right behind Hutchins Everett, but I like what he did in terms of just as a freshman.
Phillip Russell could get freshman of the year, and I think that's a great point. I mean, it would have been Rayshon Taylor, you know, and unfortunately, like I said, missed too much time. Really hope to see him come back strong next year. I think he's a terrific player.
In fact, I looked at this. I had Elijah Hutchins Everett freshman of the year. I take that back. It was right there in front of me.
But you have it that close, though.
Yeah.
Like, Phillip Russell,
but there's
Elijah Hutchins Everett freshman. Like, there's going to be a freshman of the year discussion between
those two guys. But Reed could make the team ahead of Elijah. That might be the player I think might not get on that list would be Kasim Nicholson. I would assume in terms of who I think will actually make it.
Nicholson's
I think
you'd third get, in rebounding.
I think you'd get Grayson Murphy on the list. I think he will make it. You ask who my list was, that's my list.
Yeah, I asked
but,
you.
But
your guys.
But I think he'll make it.
Yeah.
When the team's announced Tuesday, Grayson Murphy will be on it.
Now, we just made a list where only Janai Broome from Moorhead made it. Is there an argument for somebody like a Trey Hollowell who finished with 83 pointers in the league and only second to Tevin, or a Talon Cooper who led the league in assists? Yeah, I mean, is there you don't think there's a spot for those guys? I mean, they're
not on the first team.
Not on first team?
No.
Here's what's crazy. That's how good the OVC's been at the top.
That's right.
I know the bottom has struggled, and that's going to be for a lot of the second team guys, and that's fine. It's a lot of terrific players that you had to key for. But if you take Semo, Morehead, Murray State, and Belmont, there's 10 players there, obviously, that in any mix that you can get onto that all OVC first team. And but I do think it's interesting. I thought maybe, and I know this is just your list, and we're going to find out a lot more soon, but I would just have to think Morehead gets more than one player. But you're right. I mean, it's hard. I mean, KJ Simon was good for UT Martin. How could he not get on all-OVC first team with all the different numbers he was able to put up? The only thing that I wonder will cost him is they didn't make the tournament.
That is true. They did not.
And it's, I'm just counterpoint. Yeah. I don't know how coaches and like SIDs who vote for this mess think about it. This is not a media. These are not media awards. I don't know how they think about
they
it.
They do factor in from coaches that I've spoken with before, not just ours. They do factor in how the teams did. They really do. That is a factor. So teams that don't make the tournament, you're not going to get as much consideration. That's that from some coaches.
And anyway, we say these things, and KJ Simon averaged 17 points per game this year. I mean, he was,
to me, he's a no-brainer on the top 10. I don't understand how you could leave him off. You could, I'm sure, make maybe an argument for another player for Morehead to make the list, but not at his expense.
Yeah, I'm just asking.
You could kick Sim Nicholson off, maybe, or I look at that. I'm not sure who else, or the kid from Austin Peay, maybe, if you feel he didn't impact it. I think in the A-Sun, he's going to be a big star for them.
And another, absolutely. And another freshman that I think just deserves a ton of attention is Will Richard. I mean, yes. Philip Russell and Elijah Hutchins Everett are going to be in that absolute conversation. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Will Richard came in as a freshman and put up 43-pointers and averaged almost 12 points per game as a freshman. I mean, his star is going to rise quickly in a Belmont uniform.
And if you did an all-freshman team, those three would certainly be right on it.
Yeah.
No doubt. Absolutely.
I'd love to see the OVC have an all-freshman team. I'd love to see an all-freshman team. All you need to do is pick five guys. No need to do 10. Pick your top five freshmen. Let's roll with it. These be your rookie of the year running. I think that'd be a lot of fun, and I think that'd be fair. We say all this, and let's move to player of the year. KJ Williams is player of the year, offensively.
He is, and it's been over the last, like, 5-6 weeks that, because it was a close race.
Was.
Until they played Morehead the first time. Let's see what happens here. You got head-to-head. Let's see what happens when you guys play each other.
Yeah.
Okay. That took care of that.
Yep.
Then we played Belmont. Okay. He got into foul trouble. Still didn't have a bad game.
Nope.
But did better than Musinski did there. And
then the second time around for both teams.
Yeah. It's a different thing. But over the last 3 weeks, he just pounded nails into the award of this is mine.
Yeah. Second in the OVC in rebounding. First in the league in scoring, which it was Tevin for a long time.
Yeah.
And KJ has taken that over in the last the last 3 weeks. You take a look at really everything else from an all-around standpoint.
Steals. He led the league up until this past week when Murphy passed him on the night after the Belmont game because he had more than KJ did. And I think he was one ahead of him going into yesterday.
In league play, yes.
Yes, in league play.
In league play, KJ was averaging almost two steals per game, or was two steals per game. He was phenomenal. And it's those wing passes. They keep trying to beat him on the wing, and he just goes and gobbles them up every time in the open space. That guy on the wing trying to back him down, and he just comes over and just those big ball-hawking arms just take it away.
And I know they scout it. They know not to do it. But what I'm thinking is when in the heat of a game, that looks so open. Oh, that's an easy pass. I'll get that right in there.
Yeah.
And then he stole it.
Yeah. It's like, dang it.
And then I saw that in the scouting report.
Yeah. I forgot that he's a 6'11 center
that's
a lot faster than we think. And he literally has arms that are 8 feet long.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like Stretch Armstrong. He's like,
kind of looks like that. Yeah.
Deny it. Yeah. He just slaps it away.
He's a crafty player. And the thing KJ's done from his freshman year, he's learned to do that most of the time without fouling.
Yeah.
Previously, he'd have two hands on or hand on the back and lean into a guy. Can't do that. And he's learned how to do it. And that's part of evolving as a basketball player.
And here's the thing. For the season, not just OVC play, for the season, he's fourth in the league in steals. for the season.
And big guys don't do
He's
that.
He's a 6'11 center.
Yeah.
What the F? I'm saying it.
Okay.
KJ effing Williams. I'll say it's just seriously. He's player of the year. I think that's another slam dunk thing.
As is defensive player of the year, and that's Jani Broome. If you don't believe it, just look at the block shot differential.
Yeah.
Because the night that we played, I think it was Belmont, because this is where we brought it up. It was something like Nick Musinski to take over the block shot lead from Jani Broome that night would have had to have blocked 58 shots that night, and hope Broome didn't block any that night.
Right.
Because if he blocked one, then he wouldn't surpass him.
Yeah.
That's the lead, yep. At least as of that night. I don't really know what it is now.
Here's what it is now. It's crazy. Jani Broome has 123 block shots. He's averaging 4 a game. 123 block shots in 31 games. Number two is Nick Musinski with 50.
And that's good. That's good. A good year.
Oh, that's a great year.
That's good enough defensively to get you on an all-OVC team, first team.
Jani Broome has 73 more blocks than Nick Musinski.
So there you go. Yeah.
So he has more blocks ahead of Nick Musinski than Nick Musinski has on the season. It's done.
Yeah.
That's got to be done. Yeah. Unbelievable. And we say these things. Guess who's third in blocks? KJ Simon.
Yeah.
Who you brought up as a guard. He's a guard. He is third in the league in blocks. Fourth, Chris Nix, just another role player for UT Martin. Mamadou Diarra for Tennessee Tech, thought he had a decent year. 27 blocks. KK Curry from UT Martin. List goes on and on. But you talk about, it's not just blocks, it's steals too, which goes to Grayson Murphy. Yeah, Grayson Murphy's not Defensive Player of the Year. It's Jani Broome.
Because of that massive differential. I mean, that's – and those are the ones he blocked, not the ones he altered. They don't keep up with what he altered. There's no telling how many he altered. You get in there and go, uh-oh. I'm going to throw it straight up in the air, and that's not a block shot, but you didn't make the shot because he was standing there.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so he's – to me, that's a no-brainer. And if you had an all-defensive team, you'd probably have Murphy maybe right there.
Yeah.
KJ probably going to be on that too with the steals.
Yep.
But as far as I know, they don't do a defensive team. And to me, that's going to have to be Broome.
Unbelievable. Neil, a few more points here. Did you watch the All-Star game?
I did. I did. Watched some of it. Yeah. And then flipped over and we finished up some shows that we needed to watch because I was about to go to sleep.
Yeah.
What,
you didn't want to watch the 160?
I thought maybe they were going to play all defense in the second half since they didn't play in the first half.
No,
they didn't.
No. Ja was pretty special.
So once Ja was out, it was he may had his two highlight plays, and I was like, that's really kind of all I wanted to see. So that was good enough for me.
Yeah. Steph Curry, of course, was defense or not.
He
still made the shots, which is unbelievable.
And I don't think – is it against his contract? He can't shoot from right at the edge of the three-point line, right?
No.
Is that considered something he just won't do?
Yeah, it's like 15 feet.
He's going to have to back way, way off of it. Like, you do know you can get closer. Like, I think he maybe thinks that's just not fair.
Yeah.
That's not fair. I would hit all of them if I stood there. That's not fair.
It's too easy for him.
So I'm going to step back here and make almost all of them.
Yeah. At that point, some of those should be four-pointers.
Well, I'd say he would agree with that.
I would explore a four-point play.
But, God, it was amazing to watch his shooting.
It was amazing to see Ja, first of all, just at the Belmont game, then went to the All-Star game, had his highlights there. Since then, he's already had a 20-point game, 25-point game against Minnesota.
I told you he wouldn't get 50, and he didn't last night, did he?
No.
Ha-ha.
Yeah. Ha-ha, he got 46.
Well, 46, I guess. Well, okay. So 46, but still.
That's a franchise record. Single-game franchise record.
He's going to get 50 game.
He's in his third year.
I know. Neil. He's so much fun to watch.
I don't want to bring this up. Somebody brought this up to me earlier today, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. We're podcasting. It's crazy to think, and I'm not trying to take anything away from this, but this is a rabbit hole, but it's worth mentioning. I'm not trying to compare and contrast. Ja would have been a super senior this year for Murray State men's basketball.
Yeah. If they couldn't have done – okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. I don't just pontificate away.
Right.
I don't want to talk about national championship contender and all that sort of stuff because that's a what if. That's a multiverse situation. Like, well, what if John stayed and played 5 years and he'd have been crazy? What the hell? I'm just not going to do it. But it is fun to kind of think about that what if scenario. Like, if Ja had been on this team, I say these things to make one point.
Okay.
I think, and maybe you've seen this too, it absolutely was not a burden to play with Ja Morant. Absolutely was not a burden.
No.
Every guy loved him down to the 14th man, coaches, players, all of that sort of thing. But you had that next year where you went 23-9 and you lost on a tough backdoor cut, a terrific offensive play from Belmont. Great team. There's no NCAA tournament that year, which probably would have broken Racer fans' hearts more than losing right. the OVC tournament to begin with. I could be wrong there, but that's just I'm extrapolating the possibility of that emotion of, oh, you took the NCAA tournament away from us. We only get it once a decade. Why are you doing this to us? COVID, this, and it was just a bad situation. Everybody missed out on their tournament that year, including SEMO, Rika Patterson and that team. Yeah. Who knows what that could have done. The next year, and I'm not trying to compare, you have a COVID year, you go 13-13, and then this year you're 28-2. No one is ever going to say it, but I would have to think there probably is some incredible emotions in which they're just like, hell yeah. Hell yeah, we did this. We did this, and no disrespect, Ja wasn't here. Again, no disrespect. Terrific player. One of the best in the world. Comes through Murray. Does nothing but great things for the entire program, for himself, for his family, his friends, his teammates, coaches, everything. I'm really not trying to take anything away. But at some point, it's like when a coworker like is part of your team, and then they go to the next level, mm-hmm. you know, and they do great things, and then you can still do great things. I would have to think that maybe at some point, and I'm going to use the word, my favorite word, maybe it's cathartic.
Hang on. I got it.
Don't. Don't look that up. There, you don't need a thesaurus for this.
K?
No. C?
U-H?
K? K-U-H? Thar? I'm saying, like, again, and I'm not trying to take anything away. Maybe you have some insight in this just from more private conversations. I'm not sure. I'm not trying to compare apples and apples and oranges. Each year is its own. I've never met someone like Matt McMahon who can compartmentalize the presence of mind of not comparing past seasons and past players. But I'd have to think at some point, Tevin Brown and KJ and some of the other guys that have been around for a long time and the coaching staff too, you know, all of these numbers and statistics always come out. It's like, well, this coaching staff's done this with these players, but Ja Morant for 2 years, what have they done without him? Nothing. You just went 28-2 with plenty of basketball in front of you for a postseason, and you just had great players. I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but you just had a 28-2 season, and Ja Morant's in his third year in the league. I don't want to say the two are separated. The two are tangential. Ja's coming back, offering insight, practicing with the team, helping the guys out, but you did it without his services. Do you think that there is some sort of an emotional relief to that? Or how would you describe it? Maybe if you were coach. I mean, Matt McMahon's not sitting here at my kitchen table drinking a cup of coffee, but if he was, I'm curious how he would answer it.
I don't know. I would think that's probably a question for him. In my opinion on Matt, I think he knows, you know, that he's done as well as he can do here. But, you know, he hears when people are dissatisfied. Heck, he knows. When you take the job, you know, they're not going to be happy when you go 13-13. They won't be happy with a losing season, but you're missing the big picture if you don't look at the amount of success he's had. You can't imagine the schools that would sign up for Matt McMahon over 7 years. Is this all you could do? Win four conference championships, 150 games, four seasons of 25 or more wins. I mean, a lot of schools would take that. So I don't know that they think
a lot of schools would
take that. I don't think that they – I don't really think that he and his staff think too much about it.
There's some top 25 schools that will take that.
You better believe it. And you know, I don't have any doubt he could do it at a different level. I hope that doesn't happen for a long time unless he wants it to happen. I always want – anytime that situation ever comes up for a coach, I always want the best for them. But Matt's a terrific guy, good community guy, brings not just good players here but good character players here in the community. And to me that means a lot. I love what he's done here. I love having him as the head of the program. And I'm so glad that if anyone said, well, the only reason that they were good is because they had John Morant. Well, they don't have him this year. They weren't ranked in the top 20 when they had him. And he was, as you said, he was terrific. But their schedule is
phenomenal.
Their schedule is what helped them get into the top 20 and then beating the teams.
Yeah.
They've had, when you beat teams that win or come close to winning conference championships, play Auburn close, you have the outlier game where they just didn't really play a really great game against East Tennessee. And they lost that one. But
a team that still has a chance to win SoCon,
they do,
despite their record.
But other than that,
they're tough defensively.
They have just had a phenomenal season, history making. They've already done something that no other team's done with the 18-0 in OVC play. And Murray State doesn't get ranked in the top 20 very often. And here they are ranked in the top 20, a few years away from a John Morant era. So that shows Matt can get it done without having an NBA Rookie of the Year on his team and can build. And to me, the recruiting year that they had with these transfers, that's what helped set this thing into motion for this year.
Yep.
Because many times you go get three transfers. If you're good on two of three of them, you honestly got to probably feel pretty good about it. And, I mean, they hit it out of the ballpark with all three of them.
Yep.
All three of them have been major contributors. And they love being here. I mean, we talked with Trey Hannibal after the game Saturday, and I can't wrap my head around this. He said these words came out of his mouth, and we were recording. I can play them back for you. I'd lost my love for the game. Like, Trey Hannibal, the guy that I see out there that's up and down. I mean, he looks like he's so happy to be out there, and he lost his love for the game. Are you kidding me? And look at how much he loves it. And DJ Burns, it's been said he leads the nation in smiles, and I think he does. I mean, he absolutely loves every second of being out there. Carter Collins didn't come in here with any attitude. Hey, I was from Davidson. I'm a double-digit scorer. I need to be sure.
That's a Davidson team that's top 25, by the way.
And here he is contributing, great defensive player, makes key shots when he has to, gets to the free throw line, can make free throws.
He's converted his offensive prowess into defense.
He's a fantastic teammate. And all the combined have been exactly what the Racers really needed from this past year to make the team that you see right in front of you. They really do. I know the freshmen to this point haven't had a lot of contributions. But, their time's coming down the road.
It is.
It just isn't
I agree.
Here. It just isn't here yet. You needed this infusion of transfers to have the special year that you had.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. A few final points, Neil. You have a laundry list of, if you want to air the dirty laundry, it's actually clean laundry.
Dirty laundry?
Okay. I've got dirty laundry I've got to do on this Sunday afternoon. This clean laundry that you have some really cool nuggets that maybe you could share about some potential Missouri Valley tidbits is maybe a good way to put it.
Well, we had, first of all, a couple of things. We had Kevin Saul on the halftime show, and people are wondering about the football schedule. And he said that probably 2 to 3 weeks, there have been some developments in the Ohio Valley Conference with the Big South merger in football only.
Absolutely.
So that may or may not alter what the Racers do schedule-wise in the OVC this year. We're going to see how that pans out. So I'm not really sure how that's going to happen, but he said probably 2 or 3 weeks. I know that the Missouri Valley Football Conference will have the Racer presentation tomorrow for Murray State.
That's Monday for those.
That is Monday.
Yep.
So I don't know how that'll go, but that presentation will have to be formally made, and then I would assume if it goes well, sometime shortly after that, they will extend an invitation to Murray State, and they'll be all in if that happens after this coming season where they'll play in the Ohio Valley Conference. As far as basketball scheduling, I know the women, they have nothing on schedules yet in terms of being released, so I don't want to say that. But the Missouri Valley have done travel partners for the women's teams. It's my understanding they're going to do that for the men's teams this next year. I would guess Murray State will be paired with Belmont, and that'll make some an extra night of travel that you're probably not used to because you'll play Wednesday through Saturday games. And, the racers on some of their longer trips, of course, they'll fly to some of those and then fly back. Those are some things that are going to be done differently. But I'm really excited about that next step, but I don't want to let go of this one. It's been a fun ride in the OVC, and we still have a little ways to go that might take us to a magical place where this program's never been before.
Quick couple other tidbits I want to quickly mention before we get out of here. The Ohio Valley Conference, you mentioned one part of it. The OVC in a united front with the Big South already have games with the Southland lined up. So that's an interesting blend of games that you've got going on now. You've got Southland contests, which Murray State does have Southeast Louisiana this year, which is a tough draw. It's at Southeast Louisiana, and they're typically a ranked opponent. You're going to have this Big South infusion into the OVC, which will probably be part of Murray State's schedule this upcoming year. It's going to be a unique Murray State football season. Certainly something you want to grab those seats for, because it'll be really interesting opponents that you may be not used to seeing around Murray and even visiting opponents. You may get a unique blend of flavor if you follow the Racer football season this year. But the other thing you've got, since you and I last spoke, Neil, you not only have University of Arkansas Little Rock, since you and I have talked, we talked a little bit about the University of Southern Indiana, now you've got Lindenwood. So now all of a sudden, this is a conference that's trying to rebound from a mass exodus. You had some comments out of Tennessee State, particularly Eddie George, where he basically said he thought the OVC was falling apart, which I found...
I don't think it is.
Interesting.
Doesn't look to me like it is.
I mean, if it's not what Tennessee State wants, then they'll go find something else.
That's fine.
But as far as a rebuild is concerned, Lindenwood is a terrific basketball program in a beautiful campus in St. Louis. You've got... And then you've got USI, great facilities. You now have two Division I programs in Evansville, where the OVC tournament's going to be in a week. And I know Evansville men's basketball is in the middle of trying to rebuild what it's got and its passionate fan base, but they're still in the Missouri Valley. Now you have USI and the OVC. That makes for terrific basketball near Western Kentucky. And the OVC is still going to be a lot of fun to watch. I mean, despite this exodus, you've got some interesting teams, and you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. I think it's extremely possible, maybe not soon, but with the Big South addition to football scheduling so that you can make sure to have your auto qualifiers, I'm just curious, do you go get a fourth team for the four teams that left? Do you go get another?
You got 10 now. Lindenwood has football. So you had Lindenwood. You have Eastern Illinois, SEMO, Tennessee State, if they leave, you get Tennessee Tech, UT Martin, Robert Morris, Gardner Webb, Charleston Southern, and Campbell. Campbell has the top-rated recruiting class in FCS football. They didn't have a great year, but their coach is one of those that went out and went after some of the top recruits in the nation at all levels and landed several of them, believe it or not. So whether it'll pay off for them, I don't know.
That's awesome.
But if it does pay off for them, then they possibly could be a power. But as of right now, with those 10 teams, and I don't know how long it'll take Lindenwood to end up playing for at the OVC level where they can compete NCAA. I guess that's a four-year wait for them too, but although they could still play the schedule, just not be eligible for the championship.
It makes me wonder if...
Gives them 10 football teams.
It does. I bring that up, one final quick note on that. I do wonder if the NCAA, I've been reading, isn't the NCAA considering expedition of these four-year waits down to either two-year or even possibly 1 year because of so much transition?
That I don't know. I haven't heard that.
I think that's possible. We'll talk more about that later as we get into this mess. But, Neil, I'll leave you with this, man. Next time I'll see you, probably be the OVC tournament. Do think I'm going to try and work for the Associated Press for that experience. And then, like I said, whatever happens with the men and the women, regardless, the women have some work to do, obviously, if they want to get into an NCAA tournament, but the men, they're in. I'm going to go and say it. Too many people are saying it. It seems like a mathematical lock, but, you know, you're going to be a busy man the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I have the Girls Sweet 16. I'm back there the week after next, so I'll do that Wednesday through Saturday, and then hopefully have NCAA tournament action the next week.
Well, we'll have a lot to talk about by that point. So
we will.
Neil, appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
See ya.